From their mountain stronghold somewhere in Colorado, Nikonians Talk Radio proudly presents The English Doctors. Welcome to another episode of The Image Doctors. Today is January 12th, 2006. I'm Jason O'Dell, joined as usual by my partner in crime and co-host, Rick Walker. Hey, Rick.
Hey, how's it going, Jason?
Going good. How was your New Year?
It was good. It was pretty relaxing.
Good, good.
I was a complete slacker in terms of shooting, but I still had a good time.
Rick, when are you going to learn? You got to get out there.
I know. I was just recovering from my normal job, so I think you understand.
I do understand. I hear we have a sponsor for today's show.
We have a bunch of sponsors. It's our silver, gold, and platinum members. We really appreciate the contributions that you members have made. It enables us to do a lot of things on this site, including what we're doing right now. So thanks again.
Let's see. So what else is going on today? We have some contest winners to announce, Rick. And in the black and white category for December, the winner is Thomas Sisto with his photograph entitled In Flight. Really nice photo, Thomas. And the color winner is entitled Cold in the Woods by Igor Sperka of Slovakia. And both of our winners happen to use Nikon D70s.
Yep.
It's time to take
very,
your pictures.
Very popular camera and very cool images. Looking at them right now, very, very nice.
Yeah, good job, guys. And keep up the good work. And, of course, all of our 2005 monthly winners are entered in the finals to win some prizes that will be announced probably next month on Nikonians.
Some good prizes. I believe, too.
That's the rumor, so we'll see what happens.
And we have some insight into that, so they're good prizes.
That's right. What else is coming up? Oh, well, for any of you Texas Nikonians, there's a imaging conference in Austin coming up on January 22nd through the 24th. That's a Sunday. It's called the Imaging
USA.
Probably
more than a Sunday, I bet.
Well, it starts on a Sunday.
Okay, all right.
Okay, and it's called Imaging USA. The website is imagingusa.org. And it's a trade show, exposition. Nikon's going to be there. A bunch of other guys are going to be there. All the major companies should be there. You can go over and spit on the Canon booth or something. I don't know.
That's always a good thing.
Yeah, you know.
But it's really, no, I mean, just pity them, I think.
That's right. Just shake your head and say, too bad they don't have a D2X.
It's sad.
I'm going to be there, and if you can find me, I'll be wandering around in my Nikonians baseball cap. And if you can find me, I will give you a Nikonians special edition Optech neck strap for your Nikon camera.
Woo-hoo.
That's right. It's really,
those are nice, actually.
They are very nice. I use an Optech strap normally. So come down to Austin, Texas, January 22nd through the 24th, and find me on the trade show floor. I'll be there on the 22nd and the 23rd.
And that brings up an interesting subject about somewhere else.
That's right.
That we're going to both be, actually.
The big show.
The big show. The PMA.
The PMA. Photo Marketing Association 2006 is going to be in Orlando, Florida. It's February 26th through March 2nd, I believe. And that's the big show in the United States. It's held every year. This is where there's usually some major product announcements. And all the big players are there at this show.
Including
Nikonians.
Yeah.
That's right. We're going to have our Nikonians booth there. And so we'll have more information on this probably in our next show. But just to let you guys know, if you're thinking about coming down to Orlando, Nikonians will have a booth at the PMA show. And if you contact us, we can maybe help you get into the show at a discount.
Jason on that.
Just send an email to the talkradio at nikonians.org and ask about getting into the PMA show.
Yeah, and actually right now what we're planning on doing is recording a podcast while we're down there.
Definitely.
So we'll do a PMA report.
Show reports from live from PMA. It's Saturday night.
Yep.
No, it won't be Saturday night.
Well,
it'll
it's
be Sunday,
like yeah.
Sunday evening.
Yeah.
Oh, darn.
Yeah.
So speaking of mail.
Uh-huh. And we did get mail.
We got mail.
It's amazing.
Holy
actually.
Cow. I have to admit, I was actually pretty surprised that we got mail, but thank you, listeners, for sending us mail.
We got a bunch.
Yeah, we did.
So we picked out a few. Yeah.
We've picked a few. And Rick, why don't you take the first one?
Okay, the first question that we thought we'd cover is has to do with shooting in low light situations. And this question came from Dave Douglas in Los Angeles, California. And he's in a situation that a lot of people are in. He's been using his D70 and doing some flash, but would like to get some more natural-looking photos indoors. And that's a really nice look. I mean, I can certainly understand it. So he asked for our thoughts on that, including, you know, the idea of getting something like a 50-millimeter 1.8 lens or something like
that.
Which
I have.
Yeah.
I have the non-D cheap made-in-China Nikon 50.
I've got a 51.4, but I bought it used, so it was actually pretty cheap. But that's a great choice for shooting indoors. If you're shooting on a DSLR like the D70, it'll be a little bit longer, so it's probably better suited to portraits of a single person rather than multiple people. For multiple people, you might want to look at something like the 35 f2. Autofocus lens. That's a very nice lens. Got one of those.
That new Sigma lens has been getting a lot of attention.
Yeah, and that looks very cool from what I've seen. If I did more of that kind of stuff, I would seriously consider getting one of those.
That's a 30 millimeter 1.4.
Right. Now it's just for the smaller sensor size. It's
a
DX
lens.
Format lens.
And that's more expensive too. That's about a $500 lens.
Yeah, it's not cheap.
It's not cheap, but then that's what you're paying for that 1.4 aperture.
Yeah, but on a budget, 51.8, a used 35 f2, those are great.
I tell you, I am continuously impressed with just how well my 50 plastic barreled 1.8 Nikon performs. I got it for under $100 new.
Right.
And the thing is awesome. It's really good. And I think now it's a 1.8D, so it's even a little bit better if you're using a flash. Definitely get the D version if you can.
And if you do look for them used, sometimes you can find those 50s out there for about the price of the lens caps that are on it.
So, that's right.
I mean, it's pretty funny, but it's true.
They're just really easy to manufacture,
yeah.
50mm
I got
lenses.
One for my son, paid $25 for it, so... You can't go wrong. The other thing to consider, too, is not just lens-wise, but a couple other factors. One, don't be afraid to use some of the higher ISOs on DSLRs. The D70 does pretty well, as do most of the others, and for touching up the noise that can be in the image at high ISOs, something like Noise Ninja, Neat Image, those work great.
Yeah, and you'll get really good results even with a flash. Just bump up the ISO to 400, and you're going to get perfectly good images.
Yeah, that's a good point, because when you're at the lower ISOs, like 100 or 200, you're going to see more shadows in the background. You take the ISO up with the flash on the camera, and it starts looking more natural.
That's right.
The other thing is, you know, don't forget to bounce the flash, too. That'll make a big difference.
And if you have that SB800, experiment using the diffuser dome that comes with it. Mm-hmm. If you're doing some stuff that's fairly close range, you can get some nice results. Point the flash head at a 45-degree angle or sometimes even vertically and experiment with that. I mean, heck, it's digital. You're using a D70.
Yep. Might as well give it a try. But hopefully those thoughts help. And we do appreciate the email, Dave.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
Okay, the next one we have is from a listener in Scotland, and it's Chris Freer, who's in Fife, Scotland, and what he was asking about was just compatibility of lenses on a D50 body. He's in the process of getting one, and he wanted to look at more of a budget plan, including secondhand lenses, and so the issue of compatibility comes up a little bit more. Now, the D50 is a lot like the D70. Terms of lens compatibility, which means that you'll want to stick with autofocus lenses in general.
And that's right.
You know why that is, mainly, right?
Absolutely. Your manual focus lenses are not going to meter with a D50. Not that you couldn't use one and experiment, but it's just not worth it. So
now it's a pain in the neck if you're going to use the lens a lot.
Right. I mean, my suggestion, if you're getting the D50, see about springing that extra little bit of money and getting one of the kit lenses with it, possibly the 18-70 kit lens.
That's the one I would
recommend. Comes with the D70. That's a great lens for a starter, and it covers a pretty darn wide range of focal lengths.
It's not expensive new, which means it's really inexpensive on the used market, and there's some out there because some people will, you know, buy a nice basic kit and then start upgrading immediately if they really, you know, get enamored with photography. So they might get something like a 17 to 55. And so you can find some 18 to 70s out there for very good prices. So that's certainly something I would recommend. A nice complement with it would be something like a 70 to 300. And there are a bunch of those on the used market.
That's right.
Nikon has a nice one with the 70 to 300 f4 to 5.6 ED lens. But the G lens is not bad optically. It's not
right.
That different. Construction quality isn't quite as good. And then there are the Sigmas, the Tamron, and the Tokina 70 to 300 class that are very good.
Right.
And just look for an autofocus one.
That's right, Chris. And when you're out there with a D50, you really don't have a whole lot to worry about. The lens mount on the D50 is the same Nikon F mount that's been used in every Nikon camera since the original F. It can handle the DX lenses as well as the standard Necor lenses. Also, you know, don't be afraid to look at Tokina, Tamron, or Sigma. They all make lenses.
They're all good.
And they're all good. So
yeah.
Pretty much you're in good shape with a D50. You have a wide range of lenses that you can fit to any budget.
Yep.
Now we have our last question of the day that we're going to answer today. Comes to us from our member Keegan. Keegan emailed us and he wanted to know a couple of things, but one of them, his long question, was he wanted to know, for those of us who are into wildlife photography but can't afford the thousands of dollars it takes to purchase a big glass lens, what are some affordable alternatives? And whether he should use teleconverters. To make a long story short, that's a great question, Keegan, because one of the things we wanted to talk about in today's show was putting together a wildlife photography kit.
Yep. And just doing wildlife photography in general.
Right. And so we thought we'd spend the next chunk of time here in our show talking about wildlife photography and some aspects that you can use, some tips, not only just what to do, but the kind of products that you might be looking for, depending on your budget. Because wildlife is one of those fun subjects that I think a lot of us, when we first pick up a camera, we try to... Oh, look, there's a bird in a tree. I'm going to take its picture. Or you go on a trip to a national park somewhere and you see that grizzly bear. And then you get your pictures back, those little 4x6 prints.
And you see the little dot that's the grizzly bear.
Right.
And
there's
tell
a
your
speck.
Friends, although you can't tell, it actually is a grizzly bear.
I can't tell you how many pictures my mother said, what is that a picture of? That's a tree. I said, there's a bird there. Thankfully, they were always in the middle of the frame, so if you looked closely enough, you could find them.
Yeah. Oh. It's not an easy thing to do, though.
No, and there's a reason why people spend a lot of money on what they call big glass, especially for taking pictures of birds and small animals. But
you can still get some very nice photos with less expensive options. You just can't handle as wide of range of photos as you can.
That's right. So if you're putting together, you know, let's talk about a basic wildlife photography kit. I mean, the first thing that is central to anything. Before I start talking about cameras, I mean, camera you use, it doesn't matter. I'm assuming you have a digital or even a film camera. It really doesn't matter which one you want to use. I'm going to assume for the moment that you have some kind of Nikon camera. Let's not worry about that too much. You should, if you want to be serious about taking good wildlife photography or just good photography in general, get yourself a good tripod now.
That is the truth. And they're not the most exotic thing. They don't seem as cool as, you know, getting a long lens, but they'll do a lot more for you in terms of improving picture quality. Right?
And I'll tell you something. If you buy a good tripod today, and I know you look at that price and you say, oh, geez, there's no way I can come away with $200 for a tripod. You're going to use that tripod for 20 years if you get a good one. So buy a good one today and think about the load rate, weight capacity that tripod could hold. Because if you say, you know what, someday I'm going to be able to buy that 300-28 or that larger lens, I don't want to have to buy another tripod at that time.
Yeah.
You know, within reason, of course.
The other thing is, you know, when you're thinking about that money, a lot of times people will just absolutely obsess over, you know, which lens do they buy? Is it this brand or this brand? Is it this model or this one? And I'll tell you, if you've ever done lens testing, you'll find out that, yeah, there are differences, but they're not huge.
No.
And guess what? Those little differences are completely masked by the kind of vibration that'll show up if you try to handhold a longer lens, right?
Or and use not a use flimsy a tripod.
Use a flimsy tripod, yeah.
My advice is get a tripod that has independent leg spread. Don't get one of those ones with a center brace in the middle.
No.
Get yourself, you know, it doesn't need to be the fanciest carbon fiber tripod, although they're great.
They're great. But you don't have to have good, it to get good pictures. No, it's just a convenience in carrying it.
One thing you would probably also want to look into, as long as you're going to spend the money on a tripod, is get yourself a good ball head. I used to use a three-way pan tilt head.
All of us did.
All started with that. That's right. I hated it. It's good for some kinds of photography, for a lot of studio photography, and but a ball head is so much more versatile.
Just all around. It doesn't matter if it's wildlife or landscape or people photography, or it just doesn't matter.
They
travel.
They hold a lot more. They're more compact. They don't have these huge knobs. They're easier to pack in your luggage if you're traveling. Yeah. They're just good.
Yeah, the knobs don't snag on bushes when you're out there in the field.
They're made of this hard anodized aluminum, and they usually are really good. And so my advice on those, the Nikonian shop sells the Markins ball heads.
Those are great.
Awesome. Fantastic. They're small and they hold a lot of weight. I happen to use a Kirk ball head.
Me too.
They're great.
Primarily just because of the timing when I bought it, but they're very good. Really right stuff, has some nice stuff.
That's right. There's
the original Arca Swiss. There are a bunch of them out there. They're all good quality.
Now these ball heads, they're not cheap, but they use a clamp system for quick release plates that are really nice. It's called the Arca Swiss quick release system.
Yep.
And to make a long story short, they're milled aluminum plates that will fit either on the foot of a lens or on the bottom of your camera. They're dovetailed and they
just
clamp
slip
in.
Them in and out.
Yeah.
Super fast.
And they will never come undone. Once you put it in that clamp properly, they won't twist, they won't come off. They are fantastic. They are, again, a little spendy because a plate's going to cost you $50-$60, maybe a little bit more depending on what you get, but it's the sort of thing where you invest in it once and you can put your camera and lens on a tripod and put it on your shoulder and it's not going to twist and come off.
Right.
And that's a nice secure feeling.
Yep.
So that's the ground rule. Get yourself a good tripod if you haven't already. We have our tripod forum and our FAQs and our resources.nikonias.org. Take a look at that for some ideas.
Yep.
Now, when it comes to the next part, what everybody wants to know is, oh gosh, I have to get a lens for this thing, because you quickly discover that your 18 to 70 millimeter kit lens on your D70 isn't going to cut it. For most wildlife.
No, it's just not good.
It's just not long enough.
Yeah. Unless it's your dog, you know, and then
that's right.
Then you're okay.
So what should you look at? Well, Rick already pointed out one lens that's really good, and we would wholeheartedly recommend it if you're just getting into it and you need a lens on a budget. The Nikkor 70 to 300 f4.0 to 5.6 ED version. There's a G version, but the ED version is sort of considered to be a little bit sharper, a little bit nicer glass, and it's only about $300.
Brand new.
That's the USA warranty.
It'll vary a little bit in other countries, but that gives you a feel for where it's positioned.
And this is a nice little lens. It is a variable aperture, so at the 300 millimeter setting, you're going to be at f5.6, but that's still going to give you perfectly adequate autofocus in most conditions.
Yeah.
You're going to have enough reach. If you're using that on a digital, that 300 is now 450 millimeters.
Right.
And
that's not
pretty
bad.
Good. That's not pretty bad. Darn good. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
And just as an example, I've got some bigger lenses, including a 500 f4, and I've got one of those 70 to 300s as well. I bought it used. I think I ended up paying $200 for it. It works remarkably well, and I've used it, you know, for some situations that you wouldn't think you'd use an inexpensive lens in. When I was in Africa, I was in Kruger National Park in South Africa, and generally I was using the bigger lenses, but my son and I went on a bushwalk with a bunch of rangers, and I didn't want to carry a lot of things.
You know, the lions in Africa, when they see big glass,
they
try to eat you.
They do.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I didn't want to be eaten, so it was a simple choice. But that's what I took, and we encountered some rhinos and lots of other things. They weren't super close, not that far away either. In fact, some of them mock charged us, but I got some nice photos with that 70-300 lens. And
were you wearing diapers at the time, at least?
No, I wasn't.
Oh, darn.
Yeah.
You hope you had those quick,
I was too
drying,
stunned
pants
to do anything. So. But it was pretty cool.
So that's a good starter. Another one, some other recommendations that we have. I mean, part of it, when you're going to buy a lens, the first thing you should ask yourself is, what am I taking pictures of? What kind of animals and wildlife? Am I wanting to take pictures of little birds? Well, then you're never going to have enough focal length, and you really need to start thinking about saving up for something in the 400 to 600 millimeter range.
Yeah, the little birds are just darn tough.
They are the hardest subject.
Yeah.
But for everything else, for larger birds.
If you have
birds,
a pet parrot, then you're okay.
Well, Archie's downstairs.
Yeah,
I know. Go get him.
I was thinking about Archie, but
he's my favorite subject. Yeah. But we digress. If you're taking pictures of larger animals, 300 millimeters to 400 millimeters is probably plenty. And in fact, with the larger animals, as they get closer, that's where having a zoom can be really nice.
Yeah. Because they'll change their distance appreciably.
That's right. And so as they come in, you're going to want to back off because you're going to compose things differently. And one lens that I used to use, and it's a great value, is the 50 to 500 millimeter f4 to 6.3 Sigma, affectionately known on many forums as the Bigma. This has got HSM focusing, which
so
is Sigma's equivalent of AFS. So it's fast, it's quiet. It weighs a freaking ton, man. So you're going to want to use this on your tripod with your good ball head because it can be very challenging. Yeah. But one nice thing about the Sigma 50 to 500 is that it changes length when it zooms. And so that means when you're packing it, it's actually quite compact. You reverse the hood, and then it gets pretty small. It has a big lens foot. You can theoretically hand hold this lens, but usually your name needs to be Steve Austin to do that. So if you have a hydraulic arm, consider the Bigma without a tripod.
If you look like Arnold.
Yeah, we'd pump you up.
Yes.
Is Arnold an Iconian?
I don't know, but he should have a Bigma, certainly.
Because he would not use a girly lens like
that. No girly lens.
No white girly lens. It's only black lens
for Arnold.
That's okay. So that's the 50 to 500 Sigma. Another one in the similar range from Nikon, a little bit more expensive, the 80 to 400 VR.
Yep. Very
F4
handy
to 5.6. Very versatile, very lightweight, easy to pack.
I've got one of those.
On a digital body, you've now got a 600 millimeters at the long end.
Yep, and 600 millimeter equivalent F5.6 is not bad.
No, that's a great lens, and it's lightweight. Those go for about $1,400, give or take. You can probably find a little cheaper, and there's some definitely used market for those lenses.
Yeah, you can find them used easily for around $1,000. I got mine used for a little bit less than that. Very nice lens. The only issue is it doesn't focus really quickly. For a lot of subjects, that's okay. But if you're photographing something that's moving very fast, probably not the best choice.
Right.
But other than that, it's a great lens.
Now, I know you guys are all freaking out because we're talking about lenses that cost in upwards of $1,000 here.
Yeah, but we're going to talk about some cheaper ones, too.
But, you know, one thing to keep in mind is that is sort of the territory. If you find a lens that claims to be, you know, for example, some of these mirror lenses that are,
don't
you know, 500 f8, they're not only slow, they don't have autofocus, and they just can have horrible distortion. Some people like them, but they're really just kind of ugly.
I need to sell mine. I've got one. Do you want it, Jason?
No, thanks. But my dad used to have one a long time ago, and I thought it was cool. It looked neat.
Before we talk about budget options, because we are going to do that, one last lens that's... you know, not too cheap, but very good, is the Nikkor 300 f4 AFS lens.
Yeah, that's a great lens.
It's one of my favorite lenses of all time, actually. I just love that lens. I used to have the AF version, also a very nice lens. To me, the AFS is a whole lot nicer. I get a lot of stuff used, and I got a good deal on mine, and so it was value priced for sure. But very easy size to handle. The focusing is fast. It focuses very, very close, which is one of the big advantages of the AFS model. I think down to around 5 feet.
That's awesome.
It is really awesome. And got a lot of other things that are nice. But it is very, very sharp and very nice color rendition. The backgrounds look good. And it's a lens that works very well with a 1.4 teleconverter,
which was something I was just thinking of. You know, one way to sort of stretch your dollar is to invest in a good teleconverter.
Yeah.
And there are some third-party teleconverters that are actually quite good. The Kenko and the Tamron teleconverters are very good. We don't generally recommend a 2X teleconverter because you just start to lose a lot of quality.
I've got them, but I hardly ever use them.
Right. So a teleconverter increases the focal length. It's a focal length multiplier. It's like putting an extra lens, and you mount it to the lens on the F mount, on the actual lens mount. And as long as your effective f-stop is f5.6, and sometimes you can get away with f6.3, the 1.4 teleconverters will continue to enable autofocus on most bodies with most lenses. So in order to achieve that, you lose, when you add a teleconverter, you lose a stop of light.
With
a 1.4. There's also a Nikkor 1.7, and then there's the 2Xs. One note about the Nikon teleconverters is that they only are compatible. They will not physically mount on non-Nikon AFS lenses. You can modify that, but that's another story. You'll void your warranty if you do that. So if you're using a non-Nikon lens or a non-AFS lens, you would want to consider either the Tamron or the Kenko 1.4 teleconverter. And when you shoot with a teleconverter, my recommendation, and Rick's too, is to stop down at least one f-stop from wide open to get sharpest results. Sometimes you can't, but to try to do that.
You'll see a difference.
It will be sharper.
Yeah, you'll definitely see a difference. And but that's a combination, you know, the 300 f4 and a 1.4 teleconverter that just works great.
It's absolutely a very nice and on a lens. Digital body, you know, you're talking about I don't do multiplication in my head quite as well as I used to, but 300 times 1.4 times 1.5 gives you a 630 millimeter f5.6 lens.
Not bad.
That's okay. Yeah, that's good for most. Yeah. Again, be careful and think about your effective shutter speed, your effective focal length now, especially you digital users out there, and keep that shutter speed up or be using a tripod. Otherwise, you're going to get motion blur. Everything gets magnified as you start increasing focal length.
And don't just assume that you're AMOLED and you can handhold a lens, you know, at really slow shutter speeds. I can't all that well, so I tend to use fairly high shutter speeds if I'm going to do that. Now, we talked a little bit about the idea that we would talk about bargains, too. And a lens that I've recommended to a lot of people that wanted to get into wildlife photography on a budget is the Sigma 400 f5.6 Apo Macro. And it's important that it's the Apo Macro version.
It'll say APO.
Yes.
On it.
Yes, it will. And because there are some earlier lenses that were Apo lenses, you know, apochromatic or close to it, which means really well corrected for color aberrations, but didn't focus close. Now, it's not the close focusing thing that's really important, although that's a nice feature. The big advantage of the Apo Macro version, it is a much beefier, much better constructed lens than the earlier plain Apos or the non-Apo 400 Sigma lenses. So that's the one to get. You can find them used. They're not made new anymore, but you can find them used on eBay or whatever easily in the $350 range, even a little bit less than that at times. They vary a little bit like all used items. But it's a very good lens. It'll give you nice, sharp results. Like I mentioned, it's built well. And it's just darn cheap. And
cheap
using
is good
it on
sometimes.
What's that?
Cheap is good.
Well, cheap is good,
out.
Especially if you can use that other money if you have excess for a trip.
That's right.
Yeah. It's much better to do that.
Because half the equation for wildlife photography is being there where the animals are.
That's right.
You know, and it doesn't matter how much gear you have. If you don't get out there and take the pictures, what's the point, right?
Yep. Now, Tokina also made a similar lens called a 400 5.6 ATX series lens. I've not used that one. I've heard good things about it, though. So that's another option if you encounter one of those.
Well, and let's end our talk about lenses from... We talked about we've been to the bottom end of the scale and the middle end. We talked about teleconverters. Now, if you're really serious about either small birds or just, you win the lottery or you're looking into becoming a professional photographer and you need to have the best equipment, that's where we get into the territory of big glass.
Right.
And if you're doing small birds, you're definitely going to want to think about getting a 500 millimeter lens. Prime lens.
And have a 1.4 teleconverter
to go
available at times, too, because
right.
You'll need it.
The rule of thumb with focal length of birds is you never have enough. You always want another 100 or 200 millimeters. It just never seems like you can get close enough. We'll talk about getting close a little later. But there's really only two manufacturers of 500 millimeter prime lenses right now. Nikon.
Fast primes.
And by fast, we mean F4 territory. The Nikon 500 F4 AFS, AFS2, and the Sigma 500 millimeter F4.5 HSM EX. And both of these are excellent lenses. The good news about the Nikon ones is that they're going to be as sharp as they, they're Nikon. They're going to retain their resale value. They just revised from AFS to the AFS2, and so that means there's a pretty healthy used market out there for the original AFI and the AFS1 models.
They're a little bit heavier.
Yeah, they're a little heavier, and they don't focus quite as close. And we make this big deal about close focusing because when that bird comes in and it's 15 feet away, you want to be able to... These big glass prime lenses, most of them will only focus down to about 15 feet or so. That creates a problem for things that get too close, and all of a sudden you can't focus on them anymore.
Yeah, plus, a mistake a lot of people make is that they assume if they get one of these big lenses that they're going to be able to, photograph these small birds from, 300 feet away.
That's right.
And that's just not the case. You have to get awfully close to smaller mammals, to birds, in order to get a good shot, even with one of these big lenses.
That's right. Most of my good bird pictures are, if they're larger birds, they're under 100 feet. And if they're smaller birds, if they're any good, it's under 30 feet in most cases, and sometimes all the way down to like 15 feet.
Yep.
Which brings me over to one of the aspects of the Sigma 500 millimeter. It's a third of a stop slower. It's f4.5, not 4. So it means it's a little bit smaller and lighter than the Nikon counterpart. It focuses down to 13 feet, which is pretty darn good for a 500 millimeter lens. It's fairly easy to pack. Neither of these lenses are cheap, though. And so you have to be kind of serious about what you're doing if you're going to invest, or you have a lot of extra money lying around. The Sigma currently goes for about $4,000. That's the newest version with the new optical coating. You might be able to find a used one, but I was looking on eBay the other day.
There aren't a lot of them.
They're just not around. And part of the reason is because they're a good lens. The Nikon, if you buy it new USA version, there's over $7,000. This is not a cheap lens. The import ones go for about $5,500. Still not cheap. So you're talking about a serious commitment when you get into big glass. But then on the other hand, you're going to be very happy with some of the pictures you're going to be able to get.
Now the other option out there, and it's a newer lens, is the very nice Nikon 200 to 400 f4 VR lens.
Absolutely.
And, of course, it's got the AFS focus motor, and that is one slick lens.
This lens is the epitome of lens lust.
Ooh.
If you have one and you hold it, or if you can hold one in your hands and you can't afford it, don't. Don't touch it. Don't go there, man.
Just don't go there.
See, because we got to see Brian's lens over the weekend last
Brian
weekend.
Scherzer, who's another Nikonian that lives in the area.
And
that was
I
bad.
Didn't hold his lens because I knew just from looking at it that I'd want one.
Well, one of us made the mistake of not only holding it, but shooting a lot of photos with it.
Shame on you.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And so NAS has been rekindled again.
Yes.
There's nothing we can't even take our own advice.
No.
There's no cure
lost.
For NAS
lost
except
souls.
For a big credit card bill.
Yeah.
So that's the technical aspect of things. What I want to do with the rest of our time is talk about a little bit about
the really fun stuff,
the actual practicality of shooting wildlife and some things that you can do, general rule, how to make better pictures. And that's what we're all about here as the Image Doctors, is making better pictures, right? One of the things you should always keep in mind, the first thing is light.
Yeah, that is so incredibly important. Being there in the right light, finding the right light.
And getting a front-lit subject.
Yeah.
Can be challenging, which means you might need to go to a spot and stake it out and see where the light's coming from so that you can get there early the next morning and know where the sun's going to come up.
Patience is incredibly important.
That's right. When you're talking about animals, most animals, especially birds, but a lot of other animals too, are most active early in the morning and then late in the late afternoon to dusk.
But that's when the good light is, too, so
that's
a good thing.
That's when the good light is. The reason is that that's when they're feeding, especially birds. Feeding animals are less likely to notice you, and you're going to be able to get closer to these animals because they're paying attention looking for their next meal than they are looking at you. They're going to have a comfort zone. You're going to have to experiment. The way I approach an animal is to set up in position a fair distance away, get a few pictures, and then slowly move in closer. And if I get lucky and I can take that real close picture from 20 feet, then great. But if not, I still have some pictures. I don't just rush in. You have to move very slowly.
And you'll want to watch for the animal's behavior, too. There are signs that you can look for. Depending on the animal, it can be what they're doing with their ears. Certainly, if they turn and stare at you, that means you're probably getting into the zone where it might be a problem. So you want to look for those signals. And certainly you don't want to get so close that you're disturbing them and causing problems and forcing changes in their behavior. That's not the right thing to do.
I mean, one thing that I find works really well, depending on where you go, is shooting out of a car.
Yep. And we were just doing that this weekend.
That's right. We got some pictures of some red foxes out of the car. There was
cool
no way
pictures.
We could have approached these animals,
even
though they were fairly acclimated to people. We used the car as a blind. They see the car coming up. They don't view that as necessarily a threat.
Right.
So what you want to do in that case is get yourself a nice little bean bag. And there's a couple of different manufacturers of those. But get a bean bag, prop it up on the windowsill of your car with the window rolled down, and you can do a lot of shooting that way.
Yeah, and they're fast and easy to set up, too, because the problem is, now there's some fancier car mounts, that window mounts, and those are nice. But the problem is, if you're doing the kind of shooting where you're driving, using it as a blind, the animal may be on one side of the car at one point, may move over to the other side a little bit later, and trying
to move the window mount
is just tough. So the bean bag, you can just throw it over there, get it set up quickly. It works great. And let's see. Let's talk about some things that we did, actually.
Yeah, this past weekend we had a really good time.
Kind of a real-world situation. We were shooting a mix of birds, larger ones.
Waterfowl.
Yep, and also the foxes. And what I took with me was too much, of course, way too much stuff. I took a 70 to 200 2.8 VR lens. I took my 300 f4 AFS lens. That's the one I was talking about earlier. I took my 500 f4 P lens.
It's a manual focus lens,
but it works with autofocus bodies, got all the electrical contacts.
And that P designation means it will meter and it does all the fancy metering contacts.
Right, and very nice lens. A lot of good buys on those. But that's what I took, and I actually used all of those along with a 1.4 teleconverter, too. And so they all got used because we were shooting subjects at varying distances. Sometimes the birds and the foxes were a distance away, and then the 500 was a great choice. And I was using a D2X, so it had that 1.5 crop factor on it. And I was even using the 500 with a teleconverter at times. And then at other points, I was using the 70 to 200 and not even shooting at 200. So the distance is varied tremendously.
Right. I was doing similar. I had a 70 to 200 and a teleconverter, which I could, the VR means I can use it handheld for close stuff. And that lens combination is really nice for most larger wildlife. I find it to be sometimes a little bit too short, but that's only when the animals are too far away.
But it's very sharp.
But it's very damn sharp. I mean, just and real
handles
sharp.
Handles nicely.
Ooh, is the FCC going to kill me now?
Oh, probably.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Potty mouth.
Oh, darn. Where are you, Howard Stern?
Yep.
And then I used my Sigma 500 f4.5 autofocus lens, and that's also was really good. Don't be afraid to shoot at a slightly higher ISO.
Yeah.
With the big glass, especially you guys are using 70 to 300s where you're at 5.6 wide open and you want to try to stop down to stop. The latest trick that I have been doing on a D2X body has been to use manual exposure mode, dial in my f-stop and my shutter speed, say 800th of a second, f5.6 if I'm using my 500 f4.5, so I'm a little bit stopped down. And then I turn ISO to auto. And on the D2X, what that'll do is it will keep the aperture and shutter speed the same, and the one variable that it will change to get enough light will be the ISO. It will range between 100 and 800. I find that for a lot of pictures, I'm getting great shots with ISO 800. I know people swear by it. Yeah, there's a little bit of grain and a little bit of noise.
Yeah, I've shot it. ISO 800 a bunch of times, and it's remarkably good.
Just be careful not to underexpose, and if you do that, then you're going to have some...
Yeah,
some it's better than no picture at all.
Yeah, but one way or another, you need to do some noise reduction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can use those tools that we were mentioning earlier, Neat Image or
right. We'll
Noise
devote
Ninja.
A whole show to noise reduction.
Yeah, we could do that, because there are some other tricks you can
That's
do,
That's right. Another thing you can do to boost the light is to get yourself a speed light and use fill flash. And use the balanced fill flash with a SB800 or an SB600. And there's a neat little gizmo that you can attach if you're using a longer lens called a flash extender or a better beamer. We sell those in the Nikonians Pro Shop. They're a larger Fresnel lens that mounts. It's just plastic and it Velcros.
Really simple little gizmo.
Incredibly simple engineering, but it will extend the range of your flash. And you don't have to do anything with it because ITTL,
yep.
It just meters it and exposes
properly.
You just
strap it on and everything happens automatically. And it can make a big difference. In photos, because it puts a catch light in the subject's eyes. It gets a little bit more detail, especially if they're backlit. It can be wonderful. So that's a great way to go.
Speaking of subject's eyes, that's sort of something we should really talk about is composition. What makes a good nature picture? Rick just pointed out something that's really right. A catch light, that little specular highlight in the eye. If you have two shots, one with a catch light, one without, the one with a catch light will sell. The other one won't. Or if you just ask someone which one they like better, the one with the catch light will always be better.
They may not know why they prefer the photo.
Correct.
Yeah.
And you can get that a lot of times by using fill flash and put in some minus exposure compensation on the flash. So you dial in minus a third or minus two-thirds or sometimes even minus 1 2/3 depending on how much ambient light you have. So that fill flash is just going to give a little pop and add a little catch light to the eye.
And one good trick related to the eyes on animals or birds is that if you've got a way
birds
of doing...
Birds animals, Rick.
Oh, I know. You know what I... Birds are mammals. How's that, Dr. Science?
There you go.
Yeah. The a good trick is if you have a way of doing selective sharpening with your photo, your processing tools. If you're, you know, either shooting digital capture or doing slide scanning or anything like that, is do a little bit of selective sharpening just on the eye,
right?
And you'll be surprised at the difference it makes. It draws the viewer's attention on that eye. And it's remarkable, just a little bit. So
which is sort of related to one of the main rules of any kind of, whether it's people or wildlife or any kind of subject that has eyes. Even if you don't have enough depth of field to get the whole animal in focus sharp, if the eye is in focus, the picture will be fine.
The closest eye.
The closest eye, depending on how the animal is looking at you.
Right.
If that close eye that is sort of looking at you from the picture is in focus, then people will overlook the fact
just
that
the way the rest, that people see.
It's just psychological, and it does. And it's true. If you take two pictures, one where the whole animal is sharp but the eye is blurry, no question that people will prefer the sharp eye, blurry animal versus the other way around. Now, what about when you're making these compositions? And I tell you, with wildlife, that's probably the hardest thing to do. But the one rule, if you're going to make one change to your shooting from shooting nature, is if you can at all help it, avoid what we call the bullseye shot. What I mean by that is having the subject, the animal, the bird, whatever it is, the salamander, in the dead center of the frame.
Yeah, it just looks boring and dull.
Now, I know that's kind of hard, and that's because with some cameras, they only have autofocus sensors that are clustered in. Maybe you have an older camera where the cross-type sensor, the most responsive sensor, is in the center. Try to focus and recompose if you can.
Or just switch it to manual focus if you have to.
Yeah, but if you can put, if you can attempt to put the subject or the subject's eye in that rule of thirds, you're going to get better pictures. People are going to look at those and say, wow, that's a better picture. And they're not going to know why. The difference, I look back at my old pictures and all those birds are dead center.
Right.
And I realize what an idiot I am. I still am an idiot, but at least I'm less of an idiot today than I was when I was shooting pictures 10 years ago, because I've learned slowly. And it's hard. I still forget sometimes in the heat of the moment.
Oh, yeah. And the thing that's tough is you really don't have, you certainly don't have control over what your subject is going to do.
Right.
And they'll always do something that you don't want them to do and position themselves in a bad spot.
Right, backlight or something awful.
But you want to strive for that. At the very least, if you can crop the photo afterwards, maybe do a little bit of something mm-hmm. there too. That's another way of handling it.
And then, you know, look for animals that are doing behaviors, displays, mating displays, eating,
dunning.
Yawning, anything. Not that portraits are bad, because Lord knows I have a lot of portraits of animals, and they're great pictures, in my opinion. I probably couldn't sell them, but they're decent pictures to me, because I know how hard it was to capture that image. But when you get a picture that the animal's actually actively doing something, it's going to be a lot more entertaining to your audience, a lot more saleable to a potential editor or stock agency. That's what they look for. They look for different kinds of pictures. So look for behaviors. And some of that means you have to sit there for a while and be patient.
Yeah.
So that's sort of our nutshell on getting started with wildlife photography.
Yeah. There's a lot more to learn, obviously. It takes a long time. We're still learning.
We could do 10 more shows on this topic if we wanted to. But we won't. We want to end with a brief review of something we promised from last time, which is the Think Tank belt system and Think Tank airport addicted bag, something that I got. And, Rick, you purchased it. You saw mine, and then you had to run out of mine.
I was jealous.
Yeah.
I was severely jealous.
And We bought this stuff because we thought it was kind of a unique product, and this is a new company called Think Tank Photo, and they make they're designing mostly belt systems for active sports photographers, people who are working on a sideline where they need to be mobile and they need to have access to their lenses quickly, to their gear. And they make something called the Modulus belt system. And, Rick, why don't you describe what the
system is? They've got a number of separate components, and you can buy them as a set. You can buy them separately. They're a little bit cheaper if you buy them as a set. But it includes, front pack where, the way I use it is I can stick some teleconverters in there. I can stick a polarizer. I can stick flash cards, cable release, all the little gizmos.
It even comes with a little memory card wallet.
It does, yeah.
Which is nice. It's on a leash. It's a nice little touch.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
You pull the wallet out and it's leashed to the inside of this bag.
And then they have varying sized lens compartments, and they're big enough to comfortably hold lenses. A lot of lens cases are a little bit too small, especially with the larger lenses that are made anymore. They're a bit bigger than the ones 20 years ago. And so they're easy to get the lenses in and out. They got had a little rain cover in there too. Nice little touch.
That was a cool touch, I thought.
Yeah. And then they've got cases for a flash. And it will even hold a Better Beamer flash extender in there too.
Yeah, I can fit an SB800 and a Better Beamer in the little flash pouch.
They've got a thing for holding a water bottle. That's kind of nice. A thing called a chimp cage, which will hold a digital body on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Not with the lens on it, but just the body. So there are a bunch of different bags that they have that will go on the belt. Now, one thing I've found is you got to be a little bit careful and not load it up too much.
Right. Otherwise, your belt is around your knees.
Yeah, I did that at first. And I'm going to see if I can get everything on it that I would want.
Right.
And I could, but I didn't really enjoy carrying it, and I won't do that. It's better if you're just using a smaller number of the things,
right,
getting the essentials on there. So maybe three of the things. That's what I'm going to do. Everyone's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But
I can easily carry 70 to 200 VR, 17 to 55 DX, Sigma 10 to 20, and an accessory bag. Maybe add the flash if I know I'm going to, I can load it down if I want to, but usually I'm not going to have all those lenses at any one time.
Yeah.
I used this system at the ANPAT. That's when I first got it it was in time for the ANPAT, and it worked really well. There's some nice touches about that I personally liked was in the larger pouches, the padding is removable. And what I find is when I'm outside shooting standing up, I don't need a lot of padding,
right,
because I'm not packing this stuff anywhere. So I can pull a lot of padding out. So when I do pack it to go in the airplane, it lies more or less flat. Another feature that I really liked were these little mesh pockets on the outside of all the lens pouches, which meant that lens caps, body caps were not thrown somewhere or dropped. I could just put them on the outside, and I could always
exactly
find where
they were,
and
yeah,
I could find them. And yeah, then the built-in seam-sealed rain covers were just a cool little touch, I thought.
Yeah. Now, talk a little bit about the Airport Addicted thing.
Yeah,
that's a different.
This is a different thing. Yeah. The Airport Addicted is not cheap. It's a little under $400, but it's a carry-on bag designed for people who have a lot of photo gear. It is exactly the appropriate dimensions to fit in the overhead bin of pretty much all the major airlines.
Yeah, so it's legal.
It's legal carry-on. It won't fit in the carry-on compartment of a regional jet.
No.
But that's another story. So it's 22 by 14 by 9, give or take. I can hold all my stuff in this thing, including a back compartment for my 15-inch PowerBook laptop. So for me, this huge case, it has tuck-away straps and shoulder harness and belt, and I can fit everything in here, including my laptop, meaning that gets me a second personal item, another carry-on when I'm on the plane. It gets heavy, and you're not going to want to use this as a backpack.
No, it's not something that you take out in the field on a hike.
You can use it from a car.
Right.
You can fit a ton of gear in the thing. You can fit a 400 2.8, a couple of bodies, a bunch of lenses, extra batteries, you name it, it'll fit in there. But you don't want to hike with this thing.
No.
You go through the airport with it. It fits in the overhead bin. If that sounds like the kind of shooter that you are, which is you're frequently traveling in airplanes and you want to carry big glass or a bunch of stuff, then you might want to consider that. If you're looking for a hiking backpack, don't go there.
Right. And the thing it has in common with the belt system that we're discussing, too, is very good quality. I mean, it's very well made. A lot of nice little touches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has a monopod holder. It's got a little mesh stretch spandex pocket on the shoulder strap that you can put a cell phone in. Just little nice touches that I think are nice. It's definitely worth the money, I think, but it's not going to be for everyone.
No. Kind of a specialty item. And I think that does it this week.
We made it to the end of a show?
I think we did. I think we talked a long time.
Jeez. Well, what are we going to do until next time?
Maybe go take some photographs.
Oh, okay. That's probably a good idea, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Well, from me, I'm Jason, and from Rick.
I'm Rick.
Hey, he's Rick. From both of us, from the Image Doctors, have a good time. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yep. Do send us emails. We appreciate those.
That's right. And thanks again and don't forget to go over to Nikonians.org and sign up to be a silver, gold, or platinum Nikonian.
Yep.
See you guys next time.
All right. Bye-bye.